chapter is described as Karma Yoga, and when in Bhagavad Gita it says Karma Yoga, it is actually implying to Bhakti Yoga, Bhagavad Bhakti. So, in the second chapter, do you remember what Krishna told Arjun? In first chapter, Arjun said he is not going to fight. Then at the beginning of second chapter, Arjun surrenders himself to Krishna, saying that he doesn't know what he should do, and he is asking Krishna to become his spiritual master, and he is submitting himself to Krishna as his disciple. And then Krishna starts to instruct Arjuna. Krishna first told, what did Krishna tell Arjuna? Basing on Arjuna's reason for lamentation, Krishna reminded Arjuna that there is no need to lament over the body, because the body is not our actual self. Body is only an external covering like a dress. Body is just like an inert vehicle on which the soul rides. Just as we travel riding on a vehicle, in this material nature, the soul travels to different planetary systems riding on this vehicle of the bodies. So if something happens to the vehicle, one should not really be so much affected by that, because it's happening only to the vehicle. Nothing is happening to me. So with that understanding, we must act. So Krishna first made this analytical study to differentiate between matter and spirit, body and soul, and then he established the nature of the soul, the characteristics of the soul, and he established the fact that our real identity is that spirit soul, spiritual self. And then Krishna told Arjuna about Buddhi Yoga. Buddhi Yoga means applying your intelligence to figure out what you should do. Applying your intelligence to become engaged in devotional service. Another way to look at this Buddhi Yoga concept, do you know what is the meaning of the word Buddhi? How many of you know the meaning of this word Buddhi? Okay. You can tell it. Buddhi means intelligence. So what is actually Buddhi Yoga? We will see that in Bhagavad Gita. You see, the body has been, we say the body is like a vehicle. Body is a vehicle. So what is a vehicle? Those days, what kind of vehicle they used to use?
Chariot.
So if the body is compared to a chariot, then the chariot is drawn by who? The horses. Then the senses are the horses. If the body is compared to a chariot, the senses are compared to the horses. Five senses are five horses, that is dragging the chariot.
Now, how the horses are controlled? The horses are controlled by the rein. So, who is that? What is that rein? The rein is the mind. And who is the charioteer? Who drives the chariot? Intelligence is the chariot driver. And who rides on the chariot? The soul rides the chariot. Isn't it a very beautiful analogy? Now, the chariot will be drawn by the horses, by the expert driving of the charioteer, right? If the chariot driver doesn't know how to drive the chariot, then what will happen? The horses will pull the chariot down the cliff, right? So it needs a very expert chariot driver. So in order to control our senses, maybe too high, little low. So in order, we have to learn in order to ride on the chariot of this body, we have to learn how to control our senses with our mind through our intelligence. It's the intelligence who is the ultimate controller. Now, in most cases, our intelligence is not very, very sharp or very expert to control our senses and mind. But if we let Krishna drive the chariot, then what will happen? If Krishna becomes the charioteer, just as in the case of Arjun, if we allow Krishna to ride the drive the chariot, then will we have any problem? So, in place of our buddhi, our intelligence, if we put Krishna, that is the best possible way to use the chariot or ride on the chariot. So, buddhi yoga in simple words means putting Krishna instead of your intelligence, put Krishna there and let him drive the chariot. How will that happen? When you offer this body to Krishna, your mind to Krishna, then who will ride the chariot? Who will drive the chariot? Krishna will drive the chariot. Now you consider what buddhi yoga means. Buddhi yoga means devotional service. Devotional service means what? Devotional service means engage the mind and the senses in the service of Krishna. Offer the mind to Krishna. Man mana bhavo. Later on you'll come across that verse. Krishna is advising, you surrender your mind unto me. So if we surrender your mind unto me means what? If we see the analogy of chariot, then Krishna is saying, give me the rein. Right? You give me the rein, and I will drive the chariot. If we offer ourselves, our mind to Krishna, then Krishna will ride the chariot. And that is the meaning of devotional service. So, this way, Krishna explained about buddhi yoga. In simple words, Krishna told him that you act on my behalf. And then Krishna also further analyzed, use your intelligence to offer all your actions towards, or offer all your actions as a service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You must use your intelligence in such a way that instead of acting on the bodily platform, you act on Krishna consciousness. Instead of trying to gratify your senses, act in such a way that will give pleasure to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that is the meaning of real yoga. Yoga means what? Yoga, is yoga some kind of physical acrobatics? Gymnastics? No. Yoga actually means the process to become connected to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The actual meaning of the yoga is to become connected to the Lord. The Sanskrit word yoga, do you know what is the meaning of the word yoga? Yes? Yoga means?
Yoke. Yoke. Bring together.
Yeah, yoga means to connect. Like plus, minus. Yoga in Sanskrit, the plus is called yoga. Plus means adds. Addition is yoga and viyoga is subtraction. So yoga connection, addition. Adding to whom? The spirit soul's connection or link to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the yoga. And tell me, what is the real yoga then? The real yoga is not just some physical gymnastics or so-called meditation. The yoga means devotional service to Krishna. So the real yoga is devotional service. So in this way, Krishna spoke to Arjuna about this process of devotional service. Now, Arjuna is questioning. The first verse of the third chapter begins with a question from Arjuna. So today we'll go this way. You read the first verse, Sushila. Yeah. Buddhi, yeah. Just 1 minute. Sushila, just a minute. Yeah, she has a question. Yeah, Sudhila also. Okay. You see, Karma Yoga is the preliminary stage of devotional service. Bhakti Yoga. You see, bhakti mixed with karma is Karma Yoga. That means, you see, bhakti means, you know, unalloyed devotion to Krishna. But when the devotion is not unalloyed, means when the devotion is not completely pure. So what is the impurity that is there? The impurity is the desire to act according to our own desire. To act according to our, when we act according to our own desire, but offer the results to Krishna, that is Karma Yoga. Right? It's not pure bhakti. Bhakti is mixed with karma. Karma means acting according to our own desire with an intention to enjoy the fruits of that work. That is karma. But when we are acting, but instead of enjoying the fruits of the work ourselves, we offer the fruits to Krishna, then it is Karma Yoga. But when then after that, there is Jnana Yoga. Transcending platform of karma, one comes to a platform of Jnana. But when that Jnana is mixed with bhakti, or bhakti is mixed with Jnana, means the purpose of Jnana is liberation. When one is rendering devotional service in order to achieve liberation, that is Jnana Yoga or Jnana Mishra Bhakti. Mishra, mixed. Karma Mishra Bhakti is Karma Yoga. Jnana Mishra Bhakti is Jnana Yoga. And Jnana Karmad Anabritam. When bhakti is without Jnana and karma, that is pure devotion. Or Shuddha Bhakti. So, In the 10th chapter, when Prabhupada is describing it as bhakti yoga, he is implicating pure devotional service, free from jnana and karma. But here, because it's a preliminary stage, that karma mishra bhakti is also considered to be buddhi yoga. Right? Yes, Sushila, now you have the floor.
अजन उवाच जयसी चेतकर्मस्य मता बुद्धिर्जनार्दन सत्यं कर्माणि गोरे माम नियो जयसी केशव. अर्जुन सेड ओ जनार्दन हो केशव व्हाई डू यू अर्ज मी टू एंगेज इन दिस हेस्टली वॉरफेयर इफ यू थिंक दैट इंटेलिजेंस इज बेटर देन रूटीन वर्क.
Yes. So, Arjun is asking Krishna, O Janardhan, O Keshava, why do you want to engage me in this ghastly warfare if you think that intelligence is better than fruitive activity? So, here Arjun is Arjun did not get the clear understanding of yoga or karma. Krishna is actually using the expression karma here. Karma karma is actually implicating the engagement in devotional service. Doing the action, rendering activities for the sake of Krishna's pleasure. Now, Arjun is considering that if you say that intelligence is better than fruitive activity, like the intelligence to discriminate, which has been described as buddhi yoga. So, if that is better than karma or acting with acting for the sake of, here Arjun is actually mistaking karma to be fruitive activity. So he is saying that if intelligence is superior to karma, then intelligence is actually leading to the point that I should not fight. This intelligence is, through my intelligence I am actually understanding that this warfare is not really beneficial. Then why are you engaging me in this warfare when my intelligence is actually implying that I should not fight? My intelligence says I shouldn't fight. But my karma is forcing me to fight. Now you are saying intelligence is superior to karma, so I shouldn't fight. Then why are you engaging me in this way? So, then Arjun is admitting still his confusion. Because Arjun is not completely convinced what he should do, what he shouldn't do, whether he has the proper understanding or not. Therefore, Arjun is now questioning the second verse.
My intention is to go to my yoga equivocal instruction. Therefore, please tell me decisively which will be most beneficial for me.
So, the way you are speaking, Arjuna is saying, telling Krishna, that I cannot really figure out what you are actually trying to say. Sometimes you are saying karma is better, sometimes you are saying buddhi yoga, buddhi is better, intelligence is better. So I can't understand what you are actually trying to say. Because I have become completely bewildered. My intelligence is bewildered.
because the way you are speaking, therefore please tell me decisively, decisively, clearly, which will be most beneficial for me, karma or bhakti, engagement or buddhi yoga, right? Or karma or yoga. Now, what is actually happening? When Krishna spoke, Krishna pointed out that karma and yoga both are two different levels of the same ladder. There are different rungs of the ladder. It's not, Arjuna is thinking that they are different. But actually it is two different stages of the same rung. As we mentioned, the karma is bhakti at certain level. Jnana yoga is a bhakti at certain other level. And the pure level is pure devotion, service, which, what happens when you transcend the rungs, one rung after the another. Why do you need a ladder? To climb onto the roof. And the rung has various, the ladder has various rungs or steps. You go from one step to another step. And then finally you come to the roof. Now what is the goal of the ladder? What's the purpose of the ladder? Is the purpose of the ladder to just go on from one rung to another? The purpose of the ladder is to go to the roof. So rungs of the ladders are karma yoga, jnana yoga, ashtanga yoga, etc., etc. But the ultimate platform, the roof, is devotional service or bhakti. Pure devotion, or which Krishna has been described as buddhi yoga. So that is what Krishna will explain now. Now that Arjuna asked him, Krishna is going to explain that to him. Yes? Yeah, you see, yeah, that is what Arjuna is getting confused here, or apparently is pretending to be confused. Arjuna is getting mixed up between karma and karma yoga, karma and bhakti. Bhakti is also karma. What is the difference between karma and bhakti? Tell me, do you know? The difference between karma and bhakti? When we act for our sense gratification, it is karma. When we act for Krishna's pleasure, that is bhakti. So both have action or karma. Karma literally means action. Right? Work. So both are acting. A karmi is acting, a devotee is acting. Both are acting. Right? And it seems that both are doing the same thing. But the purpose is what is determining the difference. When we act, for our sake, it is karma. When we act for Krishna's sake, that is bhakti. Arjuna is not mistaking karma as karma yoga. Arjuna is thinking that karma yoga is karma. He is mistaking karma yoga to be karma. Right? Yes? Right. Dhyana yoga. Dhyana yoga is the same as jnana yoga. Dhyana is a part of jnana yoga. Right? That is, which comes into the goal of dhyana is actually liberation.
right? But then it becomes a dhyana yoga when it is meditating on Krishna. When the meditation is on Krishna, then it becomes dhyana yoga, not just dhyan, but dhyana yoga, right? But now, meditating on Krishna is good, but even better is to act to give pleasure to Krishna. That also Krishna will explain. He is actually rejecting also this meditation part. He is saying that a living entity cannot live without, cannot stay without acting. A living entity must act. So how can there be inactivity? This tendency to become inactive is artificial. Yes, Samshundar. Okay, yeah, good. The difference between karma yoga and not just bhakti yoga but pure devotion. Bhakti yoga, by saying bhakti yoga, you mean actually pure devotion. The difference between karma yoga and pure devotion is, in karma yoga you act according to your desire, right? Your plan, and offer the results to Krishna. That is karma yoga. But when you act according to the instructions of a bona fide spiritual master who is a devotee of Krishna, when you act under the direction of a devotee of Krishna for Krishna's pleasure, that is pure devotion. See the difference in that platform, in pure devotion. Your personal likes and dislikes, personal desires do not play any role. It is what your senior authorities, the senior Vaishnavas are asking you to do, you do accordingly. That is pure devotion. Anyway, if you, when you read Prabhupada's books, it'll become clear, what is that. You see, yoga means to with devotion, karma with devotion. But at is, you can put it that way, like without a clear understanding of God when you are rendering devotional service, that is karma yoga. You can say that because of the immaturity he doesn't have proper understanding of Krishna. But the specific meaning of karma yoga that Prabhupada is pointing out, that the fruitive, you see, karma means fruitive. Fruitive means desire for the doing something for the sake of the fruit. And when that fruit is offered to Krishna, that is karma yoga. Right? It is becoming yoga because it has been offered to Krishna instead of enjoying yourself. Whereas when you are worshipping the demigods, the purpose, it's not yoga, because Krishna is not in the picture. You are worshipping the demigods and offering, doing things in sacrifice and all. That is not karma yoga. That is actually karma. If you go into the scriptures, you'll see when the demigods are the beneficiary of your karma or doing it, it is for the sake of your own sense gratification. Why people worship demigods? Or you can say, why demigod worship has been forbidden in Bhagavad Gita by Krishna? Because it is sense gratification. The purpose of demigod worship is sense gratification. So it has to be for Krishna. Yes?
So Maharaj, the Karmayogi has a good idea about either being Brahman or Paramatma or Bhagavan, but he has his own likes and dislikes.
Right. Exactly. Like, you know, Krishna is saying, karmanneva adhikaraste ma phaleshu kadachanam. Another description of karma yoga, definition of karma yoga, actually Ramananda Roy derived it from Bhagavad Gita and told Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he asked the question, what's the ultimate goal of life? And Ramananda Roy first spoke about varnashram, then he spoke about karma yoga. And for karma yoga, what definition he gave? The definition he gave is, jat karosi, jadas nasi, jat juhosi, dadasi jat, jat tapushoshi kontya tat kurusha madarpanam. Offer it to me. So that is the definition of karma yoga. Right? And then he spoke about karma tyag, renunciation of karma. Ramananda Roy, Mahaprabhu rejected that. No, that's not the ultimate goal of life. It's external. Then Ramananda Roy spoke about karma tyag, renunciation of karma. And he used the verse, sarva dharman parityaj, mam ekam sharanam braj. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected that. So this is also external. Then he spoke about jnana yoga. After karma tyag comes the platform of jnana. After renunciation comes the platform of liberation or spiritual knowledge. For that he used the verse, brahma bhuta prasannatma na sochati na kamshati. Sama sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktin lavate param. Although he is saying mad bhaktin lavate param, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected that. So this is also external. So this is how Mahaprabhu pointed out the karma yoga, karma sannyas, jnana yoga. Even after coming to, then he came to the platform of pure devotional service. Jnana karmad anavritam. Anna bhilasita sunnam, jnana karmad anavritam, anukullena krishnanushilanam bhakti ruktam. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, yes, that's right, tell me what's beyond that. So this is the clear definition of what is karma yoga, what is karma sannyas, what is jnana yoga, and where is the beginning of devotion. Jnana karmad anavritam.
One more. You said just now, jnana is part of jnana yoga, you said. Because jnani requires knowledge, but when he wants to control his senses and go further, from contemplation, Bhagavad meditation,
You see, why this has been classified as jnana? Because Sankhya, you see, Vedas have six branches of philosophy. They are Purva Mimamsa, Sankhya, Vaisheshika, Yoga, Ashtanga, Vaisheshika, Yoga, and then Uttar Mimamsa. Right? So, this yoga, okay, like Purva Mimamsa deals with karma, right? But Sankhya, Vaisheshika, what's the other one? Shankha, Vaisheshika, Yoga. Yoga is the last one. The fourth one is Vedanta. No, Vedanta is the last. Naya. Yeah, Naya. Naya, Vaisheshika, Sankha and Yoga. Right? They come into the category of Jnana. Now, Dhyan is an aspect of Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga. Therefore, it comes into the category of Jnana. Dhyan is a category of Jnana. So, actually, all these four, Naya, Vaisheshika, Sankha and Yoga, come under the category of Jnana. And then, the sixth one is Uttar Mimamsa or final conclusion, which is Vedanta Sutra. And the natural commentary of Vedanta Sutra is Srimad Bhagavatam. So Srimad Bhagavatam is the ultimate conclusion of the Vedas. Yes, Siddhi Lalasa. Yeah, the Mayavadi, as I mentioned yesterday, whatever they do is negative. It's not positive. Yoga means positive. It's, although they may say yoga, but it's actually biyoga. Right? It's only this. This part is missing. Right? That Krishna part is missing. So that, therefore it is minus. It's not yoga. Yes.
While you were answering the question, difference between bhakti and karma, I just want to clarify if I got it right. You were saying that when one follows a bona fide spiritual master,
or Vaishnavas, you see, when one acts according to the instructions of Vaishnavas.
Okay, my question has to do with, suppose I am doing that, I am. Externally, I am sold out, I am following spiritual master's mission. But as an individual, I still have my material desires and so on. Internally, externally, I am surrendered, I am serving. But internally, so am I doing bhakti?
Yes, externally you are doing bhakti, but internally you are doing karma yoga. The conclusion is that it has to be internally also karma. Internally also intention should be pure. Just externally is not important. What really matters is the internal intention.
So when that is, when the inner or the inner is purified,
yeah,
then it will be
exactly, exactly, right. As the inside, as the heart becomes purified, devotion will become firm.
So technically, many people who may be on this path, on this mission, following Srila Prabhupada, may still technically be doing karma yoga in this context that you spoke about.
Yeah, yeah.
We may still be on a platform of karma.
Yes or no? Actually, we are dealing with achinta bheda bheda. Yes or no? Because, you know, yes, from one angle of vision it is. Because it's an immature stage. One is not completely pure. Therefore his intentions are not completely pure. They're tinged. But at the same time, because one is following the process, which is bona fide, if he continues to remain in that situation and continues the process, then eventually he'll become purified. For example, once Prabhupada told, in ISKCON everyone is a pure devotee. So some devotees got surprised. How can Prabhupada say everyone in ISKCON is a pure devotee? So they asked Prabhupada, Prabhupada, is everyone in ISKCON a pure devotee? Prabhupada said, yes. And then he said, but Prabhupada, there are so many devotees who have just joined recently, new bhaktas, haven't even been initiated. And this way they asked Prabhupada, you know, are they also pure devotees? Prabhupada said, yes, it's a matter of green mango and ripe mango. If the mango remains in the tree, even though it may be green now, it will become ripe. Right? So if you remain in the tree of ISKCON, you may be a karma yogi or a karmi or whatever, but if you stay in ISKCON, then you'll become a pure devotee. So that is the benefit of being in ISKCON. ISKCON is a factory that manufactures pure devotees. So you remain in this factory, you get processed and you'll become pure. Yes.
What is the goal of Dhyani Yogi?
Yeah. Dhyani Yogi is, they have different, you see, Dhyani Yogi, meaning one who is performing Dhyana or meditation or Ashtanga Yoga, right? It can have many objectives, like somebody may be meditating to become nothing. Yeah. Somebody may be meditating to merge into Brahma Jyoti. Some even may meditate to become the Paramatma. Right? There is a Paramatma Sajujya. This yoga, see the link? Yoga and Sajujya. Right? Link and linking. Right? So this Sajujya, joining, linking to whom? Brahma Jyoti. That way, that is a kind of a, you can say it's a kind of a yoga. Linking to the Paramatma, the Super Soul. But transcending that platform, one will come to the platform of Bhagavan realization. Where, when you realize Bhagavan, then do you want to become Bhagavan? What do you want? You want to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, should we carry on? Next is Sachimata.
Philosophical speculation, and others are inclined to know him by devotional work.
Okay. So, I was wondering which book you are reading. You are reading the Macmillan version. So, okay, it's alright. Okay. Because there's a little difference. So, Krishna then told Arjun's, what was Arjun's question? You know, by your equivocal statements, I'm confused. Sometimes you are saying that karma is superior, sometimes you are saying that buddhi is superior. So what should I understand? So Krishna is saying that there are two classes of men who try to realize the self. Who are those two classes of men? Jnani, who tries to understand by analytical study. Jnana is what? Jnana is analytical study. And karma yogena yoginam. And the devotees who try to render devotional service. So there are two types of people. Both of them are actually trying to achieve spiritual perfection. That spiritual perfection is achieved one by analytical study and the other by
devotional service. So there is no, Arjuna thought there is a difference, but Krishna is saying that there is no difference. And if there is any difference, what is the difference? Who will say? Pooja, can you tell us what's the difference? Difference is difference of level, as I mentioned earlier. Ladder, different rungs, that is the difference. It is the same ladder, same goal is the same, two different rungs. At a less advanced stage, one is following the process of jnana or analytical study. But at a more advanced stage, devotional service. Okay, now also let us also consider this point. Like what is, we saw the analytical study, right? Sankhya in the second chapter. What was the subject, how did Krishna analyze? What was the analytical study? Between what? Between matter and spirit, body and soul, right? So, you understand the matter of spirit, and then what do you understand? You understand the difference between matter and spirit, and then what do you understand? The spirit is the real thing, right? So that is what analytical study is bringing you to. And then when you understand Krishna, then what happens? You came to the platform of spirit soul, and then the spirit soul gets to know Krishna. Then what happens? Devotional service. When it is between matter and spirit, it is analytical study. Right? And then when it is a relationship between spirit and Krishna, it's devotional service. So you see the rungs, the difference, the levels? Yes.
As I'm getting the impression here that Arjuna doesn't have the adhikar to do the renown stage which appears higher, so therefore you do the karma. I'm getting the impression that here that the jnana is higher.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what many jnanis think. Yeah. So as we just mentioned, just discussed, as you were saying, adhikar, like, with what is the objective of jnana here? What is jnana yogena? What Krishna is saying? Sankhya. Sankhya nam. Sankhya means analytical study. What do the jnanis do? What do the jnanis do?
Analyze matter and spirit.
Right? So, analyzing matter and spirit, that is one level. Right? And then, the spirit soul realizes his relationship with Krishna and becomes engaged. That is called? What is that called? Bhakti. Now you tell me, which one is higher?
Bhakti is higher.
Then why do you say jnana is higher?
Because Arjuna is told, don't do that, act on this level.
Yeah. Because by realizing that the difference between matter and spirit, when you reject matter and come to the situation of spirit, that is one stage. But when you have become connected to Krishna, then is there any need to remain in that stage? So why waste your time? Krishna is telling Arjuna, why waste your time? Because ultimately, when you have to render devotional service, then why waste your time finding out rejecting the material nature or sannyas? Right? Like, you difference between matter and spirit. Realizing that matter is not spiritual, you reject that. It takes an endeavor, right? It takes a big endeavor, right? But after doing that, then what will you do?
The soul rejects matter, but then what will the soul do?
Yes, to link with Krishna.
Okay. So now, if you become engaged in service to Krishna, is there a need to renounce matter?
So we are already engaging matter in Krishna's service.
So now you tell me, who is superior, Jnani or Bhakti?
Bhakti.
Thank you.
But now I've stood in the yoga ladder. Karma is appearing on one level and then Jnana appears above in the yoga ladder. So, I'm still trying to understand. It's true that it is understood that the Jnani may not be a bhakta or doesn't know where the bhakta on the lower level, he knows Krishna is God.
A very good point. So there is a building, high building, tall building. It has many floors. And you have to climb the floors through stairs. But if there is a lift, and you get into the lift, do you have to still climb it? So Krishna is making the facility for Arjuna to get into the lift and go to the topmost floor. And that is the facility that Prabhupada has created for us. Do we have to do Karma Yoga? Do we have to do Jnana Yoga? No. Prabhupada has given us pure devotional service straight away. What we have to understand that Prabhupada has created a facility for us that we don't have to go by floor by floor. You just get into the lift and zoom, you're on the top floor. So that is the good fortune that Srila Prabhupada has created for us. We don't have to waste any time. Now after joining ISKCON, do you think that now I have to go to the Himalayas and practice karma sannyas? Do you do that? Will anybody ask you to do that? So direct service to Krishna. That is the wonderful stroke of good fortune. Yes? Okay, did everybody hear the question?
No.
No? That's why I need a cordless mic. Okay, so Siddhilavasa's question is that Prabhupada sometimes said that the devotees are not, some devotees are not advanced enough to do bhajan, nijan bhajan. So they should be engaged in devotional service. Now, that was basically your question.
So I was asking whether this statement is correct.
That statement is?
Yes.
Well, when Prabhupada says it, how can it be incorrect? You can't say Prabhupada said it. Personally, I didn't hear Prabhupada say that. But I can understand it. I can understand it in this way, that you see, devotional service should be rendered at the platform that we are in. If our consciousness is in the bodily platform, then what should you do? Engage the body in the service of Krishna. When our consciousness is beyond the bodily platform and in the subtle bodily platform, the mind, the mental platform, then one can render devotional service in mind. Right? So, where Prabhupada is saying that when you are in the gross bodily platform, render devotional service through your gross body. Don't pretend that you are in subtle bodily platform.
and try to render devotional service in subtle bodily practice. But there are devotees when they achieve certain advancement, certain level of advancement, they will render devotional service on the subtle platform. That is the bhajanananda. Right? Bhajan. Bhajan means in their mind they are serving Krishna. They are not on the gross bodily platform, they are not functioning on that platform. Whatever their adhikar or platform is, they are functioning on that platform. So obviously that's a higher platform. So is it advisable to imitate? No. But there is another consideration here. That when you transcend the subtle bodily platform, then which platform will be in? Spiritual platform. Then where will you render devotional service? On the spiritual platform. Where? In the spiritual sky. So, the bhajananandis, like our previous acharyas, exalted acharyas, they are not even on the mental platform rendering devotional service. They are rendering service in the spiritual platform. For example, Raghunath Das Goswami used to take one cupful, leaf cupful of buttermilk every 3 days. He was so strict about it that one day his servant got a big leaf and made a big cup, thinking that if I take this leaf cupful of buttermilk, which will carry a lot more buttermilk, he'll drink it, so my Prabhu will drink more buttermilk. But when Rupa Goswami saw that, Raghunath Das Goswami saw that, he asked, "Where did you get this palas leaf?" Then he said, "I got it from a tree in Shakhisthali." Now Shakhisthali is the kunja of Chandravali. So there in spiritual sky also there is transcendental rivalry. So when he heard Shakhisthali, Raghunath Das Goswami just threw that paper cup. So Raghunath Das Goswami was so strict. But one day Raghunath Das Goswami became sick. And the doctor came, and Kaviraj came and treated him. And he said that he got indigestion. So everyone was surprised. One who doesn't even eat anything. How can he have indigestion? But then Raghunath Das Goswami admitted that the previous night, he attended a party in Golok Vrindavan where he ate too much sweet rice. So in this way we can see that the platform that they are in, they are on the spiritual plane, and their activities cannot be determined by the mundane calculations. Okay, next verse. Not by merely abstaining from work, not by merely abstaining from work can one achieve freedom from reaction. Karma and karma fall action, reaction. Now some people may think that I will not act, then there won't be any reaction. But Krishna is telling here that one cannot become free from the bondage of matter just by not acting, or one cannot mitigate or free himself from reaction not by acting. One cannot achieve perfection by abstaining from work, not working. One cannot become free from reaction, nor by renunciation alone one can achieve perfection. So there are two things. One is becoming inactive or taking the course, not acting, and the other is renunciation or rejecting, detaching ourselves from everything. So if we consider these two ways, Krishna is saying neither of these is going to work. We won't be able to achieve perfection either by abstaining from work or by renunciation. So what is the secret of achieving perfection in simple words?
Working for Krishna.
Working for Krishna. Devotional service. Yeah, because he considered that still that sarvadharman parityaja mamekam sharanam braja, still it is on the mundane platform. Because sarvadharman parityaja sharanam braja, the engagement, you have taken shelter, but the engagement hasn't started. That's why it's not a perfect stage. It's on the right direction, but still it is not the ultimate. So, I mean, what to speak of sarvadharman parityaja? Even Mahaprabhu rejected Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma. See, Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma na shochati na kamshati sama sarveshu bhuteshu madbhaktiṃ labhate param. He is talking about he achieved my parabhakti, transcendental devotional service. Mahaprabhu rejected that. Na sochati na kamshati Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma. He has become Prasanna, he has become situated in the transcendental platform. But the thing is, he has become situated in the transcendental platform. He hasn't become engaged in devotional service. Therefore, he rejected. In this way we find that what Mahaprabhu gave is the highest. And everything is so systematically analyzed. Okay, Krishna Priya Mataji. So what Krishna is telling? That one cannot stay without acting even for a moment. So where is the question of not acting? Nahi kaschit kshanamapi jatu tishthati akarmakrit. Everyone is forced to act helplessly according to the qualities he has acquired from the modes of material nature. Therefore, no one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment, kshanam api. Not even for a moment one can stay without doing something. So where is the question of not acting?
Yes, next. One who restrains the senses of action, but whose mind dwells on sense objects, certainly deludes himself and is called a pretender. Sometimes we find some people, they go to a solitary place and they perform meditation. Nowadays, they don't even go to a solitary place. They just go to some club and they perform meditation. Their meditation, what do? In that meditation, they sit down at one place. Their body may not be working, moving, but what's the condition of their mind? What's the condition of their mind? The mind is thinking about so many things. Mind is meditating on sense objects, right? For sense gratification. So Krishna is saying, karmendriyani sangyamma. He has karmendriyani. Karmendriya means working senses. What are the working senses? The working senses are hands, legs, anus, belly, genital. Now, they may be inactive, but ja aste manasa smaran, they're dwelling in the mind, they're remembering, thinking of so many things for sense enjoyment. Ja aste manasa smaran. Indriyarthan, for the sake of sense gratification, bimuratma, that fool, is nothing but a pretender. Yes, Shamshinder? Same thing, there it is pointing out that how can one free the mind from meditating on sense gratification, right? Whereas here it's talking about that it is not possible. There he said, it is how it is possible, right? Rasavarjam, rasapyasya, parandrishta nivartate. Like getting the higher taste, he gives up the lower taste. When the mind has something more enjoyable, more relishable, then the mind becomes fixed on that and doesn't deviate. Or doesn't dwell on the material sense objects. But here Krishna is saying that those who are pretending, those who are controlling their, or rather restraining their working senses, they kind of meditate. But what is that meditation about? That meditation is about sense gratification. Indriyarthan bimuratma. So mithachara sulchati. He is called a pretender. Or you can say, when one gets the higher taste, it is easy. It's easily achieved.
you don't have to meditate. You don't have to, when you, once you get the higher taste, you do not have to artificially separate the senses from the objects of the senses. You don't have to artificially meditate. You will naturally meditate. Right? When one has an attraction for something, he will naturally be meditating on that. Didn't it happen when you were a young boy? You are sitting with your book in front of you, but what you are thinking of? You are thinking of how you played with your friends in the field, right? So did you have to restrain your senses to do that meditation? Huh? You're meditating on the football match, right? But did you have to restrain or artificially, you know, try to meditate on that? It naturally happened. Why? Because of your natural attraction. So here also, what they're trying to do, this mithacharis, or indriyartham vimuratmas, they're trying to withdraw the senses from the objects of the senses. They're trying to empty the mind, right? But they are forced to think about all the objects of the sense gratification. Why? Because they have a taste for that. They're attracted to that. Although they are trying to withdraw, they cannot, because the mind is attracted to that. That's why mind is flowing towards that. But the point is, mind is thinking about this, right? But if mind gets something higher than that, then the mind will automatically be attracted to that and think about that. Then the mind won't think about this. So if this is matter and if that is spirit, spiritual, if this is sense gratification and that is Krishna consciousness, and since Krishna consciousness is higher, gives greater pleasure, greater joy, then once you get the taste of Krishna consciousness, we won't think about matter.
I will read from about the 7th line from the bottom of text 4, purport.
Yeah.
Without purification of heart, sannyas is a clear disturbance to the social order. On the other hand, if someone takes to the transcendental service of the Lord, even without discharging his prescribed duties, whatever he may be able to advance in the cause is accepted by the Lord. Buddhi Yoga. My question has to do with even without discharging his prescribed duty. I'd like to know what Srila Prabhupada is.
Yeah, what here prescribed duties actually means varnashram. The activity of a brahmana, activity of a kshatriya. So a kshatriya is meant to act in a certain way. Right? Brahman is meant to act in a certain way. But when one becomes engaged in devotional service, then his prescribed duties do not become a consideration. His only duty is to serve Krishna. Like for example, when one becomes a devotee, then he doesn't have to follow his varnashram.
Any devotee or advanced devotee?
Naturally, and considerably advanced devotee, when he comes to the point of just doing whatever his spiritual master is asking him to do. Or higher author, his authorities are asking him to do. So spiritual master, when we say spiritual master, I don't mean only the initiating spiritual master, but instructing spiritual masters also. Like the temple authorities, senior devotees, his authorities. So he acts according to the instruction of his authorities. Right? On the other hand, you see, sannyas is the highest order of Varnashram. In Varnashram there are Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, four Varnas. Of them, Brahmanas are the highest. And in the life of a Brahmana, there is Brahmachari, Grihastha, Banaprastha and Sannyas. So, Sannyas is the highest order. Right? But Prabhupada is pointing out here that when one becomes engaged in devotional service, then these prescribed duties or Varnashram consideration is not important. On the other hand, if one takes sannyas prematurely, then he'll simply create disturbance in the society.
Maharaj, I have a question about karma yoga. Again, you define karma yoga based on the meaning of the word karma as the fruitive result. And when the fruitive result is offered to Krishna, it's karma yoga. And I was looking at the chapter 5, the title is Karma Yoga, Action in Krishna Consciousness. So, and it seems that sometimes Srila Prabhupada equates karma yoga to buddhi yoga or bhakti yoga in the same meaning. Does it mean that when we take the meaning of the word karma as action offered to Krishna, then it is bhakti yoga?
Right. It's the same, like, as I previously discussed many times, like, these are different stages, right? At a lower stage, that bhakti yoga can be classified as karma yoga. And at a higher stage, at a more purified stage, it is bhakti, or shuddha bhakti, pure devotion. So, next, yes. You were wondering what?
What you thought about.
Yes. You know, chanting is the process in this age. And Krishna has appeared in the form of the holy name. And the way to worship that holy name is by hearing and chanting. So that is the most important business. Right? But at the same time, there is this need of spreading Krishna consciousness. So preaching activities or preaching-oriented activities are also absolutely essential. So both these activities must go on side by side in a proper way. We must chant our rounds nicely and we must preach also effectively. That's why generally the best thing to do
is get up in the morning, right, and chant your rounds. It takes about 1.5 to 2 hours at the most. So finish your rounds in the morning. Then rest of the day you are free to serve and preach. So we cannot sacrifice one for the other. Sometimes I tell devotees that it's very nice that you are chanting 16 rounds following the four regulative principles. Especially I tell that to the congregation devotees. It's very nice that you're doing that, 16 rounds following four regulative principles. But that is not everything, that's only 50%. The other 50% is to preach. So, just chanting is not enough. And then again, not chanting is also not appreciated. If somebody says that I'll not chant but preach, first of all, you know, just that act, that not chanting himself, asking others to preach is hypocritical. So, must do both. Devotees must be engaged in doing both. Get up in the morning early, chant a few rounds before the Mangalarati. And then chant, finish your rounds after Mangalarati. Then you are free for the day, right, to preach. Yes, next. So, in relation to the previous verse, that what Krishna said, Krishna spoke about a pretender who meditates, but whose mind who restrains his senses from the objects of the senses, but his mind is dwelling in the objects of the senses. Krishna says that he is a pretender. But now Krishna is saying, on the other hand, if a sincere person tries to control the active senses by the mind and begins karma yoga, he controls the senses not by sitting in a solitary place, but with his intelligence, and he controls his mind and senses, or he controls the senses with the mind and engages himself in devotional service, his position is superior. That means a devotee's position, a devotee who has been engaged in serving the Lord, his position is superior to the so-called yogis or jnanis. Right? Thank you. Yes.
We might have a spontaneous attraction to devotional service. We want to do it, but we know it's the right thing. But the mind
Well, if that happens, then you can tell the mind, thank you very much for reminding me. I also used to think that I am pretending. So now let me become serious. Now that you told me, now I take your instruction, and yes, I'll become serious. Right? And actually, devotee always feels that he is not executing his devotional service properly. And more one makes advancement, the more one will feel that way. So there is nothing, no harm in that. It's actually better to feel that we are lacking, that we are not qualified, we are not even a devotee,
we couldn't become a devotee, what we are doing is just pretension. It's good that way. Isn't it better to think that way than thinking that I am the best devotee, everybody should worship me, I am such an example, why don't everybody see me the way I am actually, the way I actually am? You see, our business is to continue to serve. Progress is not actually in our hands. Our spiritual progress is in Krishna's hands. And we will never be able to figure out how much we have progressed. Rather, the more we advance, the more we will feel how much we did not advance. How much is there yet to go. Yes. That's why, you see, we should recognize the fact that Diksha Guru is not the only Guru in our lives. We have to have other Shiksha Gurus also. If we are not having enough instruction or guidance from the Diksha Guru, because for whatever reasons, then we have to find our seniors, superiors, who will function as Shiksha Gurus. And we'll always find, wherever we are, especially when we are in ISKCON, we'll always find somebody who can guide us. Sometimes we can even learn from a new bhakta. Right? So, or what to speak of learning ourselves when we have the opportunity to be submissive to other senior authorities or accepting their authority. Prabhu, can you please tell me what I should do? Can you please guide me? Can you please help me in my spiritual life? And if nothing, at least you can find friends and consult with them what you should do, what you need to do. And that is the good fortune that Srila Prabhupada created for us. Srila Prabhupada created ISKCON in a society of devotees. And that's what we have to understand, that our life is not solely based on the instruction of the Diksha Guru. Especially now the way we are seeing. Especially now that the Gurus are initiating all over the world. And therefore they cannot personally direct their disciples all the time. Therefore there is a need to introduce this culture of Shiksha Gurus, surrendering to Shiksha Gurus, and especially surrendering to the authority structure of ISKCON. Why should my Guru be the only person to guide me in my spiritual life? When there are GBCs in the zone, when there are temple presidents in the zone, when there are other senior devotees in the zone, and on top of everything, when Prabhupada is there, Prabhupada's instructions are there in the form of his books. And they are guiding us more effectively than anything else. That is why we have to recognize that Prabhupada is the most important Guru
for all devotees of ISKCON. For all time, not only Prabhupada's disciples, not only in the case of Prabhupada's disciples that Prabhupada is the most important guru, but actually in the life of every single devotee of ISKCON, Prabhupada is the most important spiritual master. Isn't it? Like say for example, I as a guru, what do? I am simply transmitting Prabhupada's instructions. Every morning we read Srimad Bhagavatam, give the class on Srimad Bhagavatam and evening Bhagavad Gita. What is the basis of those classes? Srila Prabhupada's books. In the class or in my course of preaching, if I say something that is not in conformity with Srila Prabhupada's books, what will happen? All the devotees will get on my case. Maharaj, where did you get that from? Isn't it? So now tell me, who is the guru in ISKCON? So that is how Prabhupada, the structure that Prabhupada gave is so important for this world. And this is how Krishna consciousness movement is going to spread. And this is how ISKCON is going to play such an important role in spreading Krishna consciousness. Which institution has these facilities that ISKCON has? Which institution today has the structure that ISKCON has? Which institution has, you know, the foundation of Srila Prabhupada's books, the way Prabhupada has established? Which institution has all these books as its basis? And which institution functions with such submission to its founder Acharya as ISKCON? Can you show me a single institution in this world? So that is the greatness of Srila Prabhupada's gift. And which institution has such a wonderful family as ISKCON has? Anywhere we go, we have a home. We have our relatives. It doesn't matter wherever we go in the world. So this is how Srila Prabhupada has created such a wonderful facility for all of us. Okay. Thank you, Hare Krishna. Yes? So Krishna is advising Arjuna now that perform your prescribed duty, for doing so is better than not working. Niyatam kuru karmatvam. Niyatam means always. Always you do your karma, your prescribed duty, because this karma is jaya, better than akarmana. Acting according to your prescribed duty is better than not acting. Because one cannot even maintain one's physical body without work. Next. Very good. So in the previous verse, Krishna said,
that you should do your prescribed duty. And in this verse, Krishna is saying that you do your prescribed duty as a sacrifice for Vishnu. You do your prescribed duty to please Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By doing that, you'll become free from material bondage. Otherwise, your karma will become the cause of your bondage. Karma becomes the cause of one's bondage. Why? Because the karma will produce reaction. Action will produce reaction. And that reaction, who will be liable to the reaction? The performer. So this is how he will become bound by the karmic reactions. But when one offers the karma, or when one does the karma for Vishnu as a yajna, then what happens? Then one becomes free from the reaction of his karma. So now you get... So this is the way one should act. Krishna is advising Arjuna that actions should be done for the sake of Krishna's pleasure or Vishnu's pleasure. And when this action is done for Vishnu's pleasure, that is called yajna, sacrifice. Sacrifice means action for the sake of Krishna's pleasure. Yes? Where did you read it from? Maybe. Like it has two paragraphs. Which paragraph are you reading? Last paragraph. Which part of the last paragraph? What is the first? Therefore, one has to work for the satisfaction of Vishnu. You're beginning from a paragraph. Right. The purport, second paragraph. From the watch down there. Nothing should be performed for that one? Nothing should be...
Four lines above.
Yeah.
One should on the right hand side.
Okay, one should therefore act very diligently under the expert guidance of a devotee of Lord Krishna, or under the direct instruction of Krishna himself, under whom Arjuna had the opportunity to work. So what's your question?
Just that why is Srila Prabhupada introducing that concept? Because some people misunderstand that and think, well, Prabhupada's saying right here, expert guidance of the devotee, but none of them are expert, therefore I'm going to listen to Krishna. It could be misunderstood.
Yeah, but then in bracket, what did Prabhupada write? Right. So if that opportunity is there, then one can. Yeah. So if you can directly communicate with Krishna, then yes, you listen to Krishna. But until then, you listen to the devotee. Yes, Shamsundar? In the age of... Okay, like if you think that you are a brahmana and you are acting like a brahmana, then act like a brahmana for the sake of Krishna's pleasure. Right? And the point is that in this age of Kali, there is no specific varna definition.
In the age of Kali, are the Brahmanas Brahmanas? Are the Kshatriyas Kshatriyas? No. So in this age, the prescribed duty does not really clearly indicate the Varnashram concept. But if you consider the prescribed duty, like if you are a computer programmer, and your prescribed duty is to program computers, then do it for Krishna. Or if you are a doctor, and if you are performing your occupation, then that is your prescribed duty. Right? Yes. Yeah. We already discussed that earlier. You see, here Krishna is speaking to Arjuna, who is his cousin. So although Krishna is God, he is kind of hesitating to tell him that he is God, because he is playing his pastimes. So Krishna is not really so boldly and clearly establishing that he is God, at least at this point in time. Eventually he will. But now, as if he is hesitating to tell himself, reveal his identity. So he is saying, do it for Vishnu. Or do it for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yeah, next puja. So now Krishna is explaining that how at the time of creation, at the beginning of creation, this understanding was established that everybody should act for the sake of Vishnu's pleasure. Sahayagya Prajashrishta. When the Lord created the living entities, at the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures sent forth generations of men and demigods, along with sacrifice for Vishnu. So, at the time of creation, the creatures, the living entities in the material nature, when they were created or when they were brought in here, then along with that, the system also was established that they must act for the pleasure of Vishnu. And that is called Yajna. So he created men and he created demigods. The men are meant to perform the Yajna, and the demigods are meant to receive the Yajna on behalf of Vishnu. So that is the system of Yajna as it was created at the time of creation. Next. The demigods, being pleased by sacrifice, will also please you. As I mentioned, the human beings are meant to perform sacrifice, and demigods are meant to receive the sacrifice
on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So when men perform sacrifice, the demigods become pleased. And when demigods become pleased, they supply whatever men want. And in this way, the men also become pleased. So by being pleasing each other, they achieve, or the society achieve prosperity. By performing yajna, the demigods become, due to the performance of yajna, the demigods become pleased, and when the demigods become pleased, they provide, because the demigods are the controllers of different, or in charge of different departments of the material nature. So when they are pleased, they supply whatever is needed. And when the human beings get whatever they need, that brings prosperity to the society. The demigods, being pleased by sacrifice, will also please you, and thus by cooperation between men and demigods, prosperity will reign for all. Lakshmi? Okay, so is it clear, this point? It's also reiterating the previous verse. The demigods, being satisfied by the performance of yajna, will supply all necessities to you. Whatever we need, the demigods will provide. But who enjoys such gifts without offering them to the demigods in return is certainly a thief. In this way, in this respect, an example can be given. Say, for example, you are enjoying electricity. Who is supplying the electricity? The electric supply department. And because of you are enjoying or consuming electricity, at the end of the month, a bill comes, right? And if you pay the bill, then the electric department will supply more electricity to you. But if you don't, then what will happen? You'll become a thief. You're stealing, you're enjoying without paying your due. Okay, so we'll stop now. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. And we'll meet again at 3:30. Hare Krishna. Gaur Premanande. Hare Krishna.